Around the world, wherever American servicemen and women are stationed, it's game time. Time for Sports Quiz. Welcome, everybody, to Sports Quiz, the lively question game which pits the fans against the experts. Questions from the men and women in service. Answers from four famous figures in the world of sports. And here's the man behind the plate, the man who'll call him right or wrong, the chief quizzer himself, Sergeant Mel Allen.
Thank you very much, Jack Costello. Hello, everybody. Well, we're all set to toss out the first question in what promises to be a close contest between the fans in service and the experts. Four distinguished exponents of the national pastime will be swinging at the questions you've sent in from overseas, trying to meet your challenge. In addition, they're divided into two teams, the red and the blue, and will compete against each other to see which team can come up with the most correct replies. So you see, it's actually a doubleheader, the fans versus the experts and the red against the blue. Now for the lineups, both packed with power. On my left is the red team, consisting of that former great catcher, now the keen and wise coach of the Cincinnati Reds, Hank Gowdy, and one of baseball's all-time top pitchers, Cincinnati's ever-popular Bucky Walters. On my right is the combination carrying the blue colors, the peppery, eagle-eyed National League umpire, smiling Jocko Conlon, and the number one big league arbiter of all time, the one and only Bill Clem. Now, here are the rules of the game, gentlemen. All questions have a point value fair to both sides. These points will be awarded at the end of each question and tabulated by our staff. Each team receives credit for as much of the question as it answers. The team that winds up with the highest total of points is declared the winner, and the prize is just that good old-fashioned pride in winning. Now, if you fail to answer correctly, I ring the bell on you like this, and the question is then thrown to the other team for an opportunity to pick up extra points. All right? That's the way we play, and now, gentlemen, let's play. Starting off with the Walters-Gowdy team, Bucky Walters, Hank Gowdy, an easy teaser from the Central Pacific. Baseball dugout parlance is quite colorful, and Sergeant Eli Friedman would like to have you define the following expressions. This is a four-point question in four parts. Number one, cousin.
An easy fellow to hit.
That's right, Mr. Gowdy. Number two, barber.
A good talker.
A good talker. All right. Number three, strawberry.
That's what you get when you slide into a base sometimes and hit the dirt kind of hard, and it rubs the skin off your hide.
You had me frightened there for a moment, Mr. Walters. That's absolutely right. It would have been a little bit more to the point had I been frightened. All right, rabbit ears.
Mm-hmm. Easy to hear.
That's a fellow that can hear all the little barbs that's thrown at him from all directions.
That's absolutely right. I suppose there are a lot of those in baseball, aren't there, Mr. Walters?
Well, there's a few of them.
Well, that's a very good answer. 4 points for the team of Bucky Walters and Hank Gowdy. And just to be ornery, Messrs. Clem and Conlon, we've chosen as your first puzzler one that has absolutely nothing to do with baseball. And it comes at the suggestion of Corporal Robert White. Now, this question is about receptacles in sports. Your task is to name the sport or games which require the following number of receptacles. For example, if I said one receptacle, your answer would be the game of tiddlywinks. All right? This is a three-point question and three parts to it. First of all, what sport requires 18 receptacles?
Baseball.
Now, I'll let you think about that a moment and then move along. Why would you say baseball?
Nine on each side.
Well, no, receptacles, I mean a little circular object of some kind that will hold the ball that's used in the play of the particular type of sport. Now, suppose I said
golf.
Golf, that's right. Bill Clem came up with the right answer. 18 receptacles. The sport would be golf. I never saw the 19th hole, Mr. Clem, but they say that's a good one to play.
I've played it many a time.
You got a lot of company, too.
That usually is the most enjoyable one of the whole round, isn't it?
Always.
All right, number two. Two receptacles. What sport would that be? I give you a hint by telling you that there's one at each end of a court.
Tennis.
No. I think you misunderstand the question. The idea is you take the ball or some similar object that's used in the sport, and you either bat it into a hole or throw it into a hole, as the case may be.
Basketball.
Basketball, that's right.
I guess.
All right, now, this last one. Six receptacles. You should be able to get that one's a favorite sport on a rainy day.
No help from the audience, please.
The same as that which you dive into when you want to cool off sometime.
Swimming pool?
Well, that's half right. Pool is partly right. Now, if you can just come up with the right answer right quick, then I'll... Six receptacles.
Billiard table.
That's right. Absolutely right, Mr. Clem. Well, we give you 3 points. We sort of had to drag it out a little bit, but we finally got all of them out. All right.
Well, we didn't lose anything.
Moving along now to the team of Bucky Wallers and Hank Gowdy once again. Sergeant Lee Barron of the European Theater of Operations reminds us, gentlemen, that in 1944, there were four pitchers in the National League who achieved the goal of all pitchers, and that is the winning of 20 or more games a season.
Mort Cooper, the St. Louis Cardinals.
That's right.
Bucky Walters.
Bucky Walters is right, Hank Gowdy.
Joe Voisel, the New York Giants.
Right.
And Rip Sewell, Pittsburgh Pirates.
Absolutely right. Good for 4 points. Bucky Walters, incidentally, topped them all in total victories with 23. Very nice pitching performance. Walters have won 23, Morton Cooper 22, Sewell and Voisel 21 each. All right. Now to the team of Conlon and Clem. Gentlemen, baseball fans always like to come up with a query they think will stump the diamond experts. Well, here is one that Private Murray Steinberg of the Mediterranean Theater figures might cause you gentlemen a bit of trouble. However, I have a hunch you can dispose of his challenge with comparative ease. He says a batter hits a ball over the fence in fair territory for what appears to be a home run. Now then, says Private Steinberg, there are at least 4 ways by which the batter can be deprived of that home run. He hit the ball over the fence in fair territory, but there are 4 ways, at least 4 ways, in which you can deprive him or take that home run away from him. For 4 points, what are those 4 ways?
Passing a runner.
That's one, Mr. Clem. Passing a runner on the base paths.
Missing first base.
Or
base.
Or any base.
And call
missing
for
any base.
That's
decision
right.
Made by the umpire.
That's right, Mr. Conlon. That's
stepping
two.
Out of the batter's box.
Stepping out or having his feet out of the batter's box as
hitting
he hits the
ball illegally.
That's right. You have 3. Now one more. There's one other. You have 3 points. Failure to touch one of the bases, passing a runner on the base paths, having hit the ball with illegally to see out of the batter's box.
Batting out of turn.
That's right, Mr. Conlon. Batting out of turn is the 4th one, and 4 points for your team. Good answer. I'd like to ask you, gentlemen, have you ever found any of those situations cropping up in games that you've umpired?
I wound up to pitch, and the umpire called time. And, of course, I didn't know whether to just stop my motion or let the ball go. But anyway, I lobbed the ball up there on old Russell at Pittsburgh, and he burns up easy anyhow. He wound up and hit one up in the bleachers, but it didn't count. And you ought to have seen that
neck of his swell up. Might have been somebody said, stick a pin in your neck, Rip, and let the blood out.
Speaking about the home run hitter, I've had the question put to me a few years ago in reference to a batter hitting a ball, and he dropped dead going from third to home, and he asked me what he was.
What was he, Mr. Clam?
Well, I said, to me, he's a dead man. I said, did that ever occur? He says, it could, Mr. Clem. Well, I said, when it comes up, you get me on the telephone. You and I'll decide what it was.
Well, I don't know how you could decide that one.
Substitute a runner for him.
Incidentally, Mel, that play that Bucky Walters brought up, about Russell hitting it, I happen to be one of the umpires in the ball game.
Is that so, Jocko? Who was Frankie Zack the pitcher?
Zack was the runner at first base, and he asked for time to tie his shoe. And I understand DeRocher sent Frankie Fish a pair of pearl button shoes so he wouldn't have to tie them.
Ho, ho, ho! Well, that'd be enough to burn anybody up, I suppose. Well, thank you very much. Moving back to the team of Gowdy and Walters now. And gentlemen, everyone likes a mystery. And so we're about to toss a whodunit at you for a quick solution. I'll read statements involving certain baseball highlights and records which have been carved into diamond history. And you tell me who done it. This is an 8-point question. 4 parts to it. First of all, who done it? His stellar all-around play won for him the 1944 National League Most Valuable Player Award.
It's Marty Marion of St. Louis Cardinals.
That's right, Marty Marion, brilliant shortstop of the St. Louis Cardinals. All right, part two, who done it? His brilliant pitching earned him the National League's Most Valuable Player Award in 1939.
I would say it was Bucky Walters.
Well, I don't blame you, because you'd be absolutely right. It was Bucky Walters. All right. Bucky, incidentally, don't want to embarrass him here, but he also led the league pitchers in the league with the lowest earned run average in 1939 and also in 1940.
I was afraid you were going to speak about his batting then for a minute.
Bucky can hit one now and then, can't you, Bucky?
Once in a while, I get a cousin. Once every 2 years.
How many home runs have you ever hit as a pitcher, Bucky?
Oh, I've hit a couple. I think I missed last year. I usually get one. I hang one in there somewhere.
He hit one in the World Series one time and against Detroit, and he's still talking about it.
That's something to talk about. That was a good World Series, too, the 1940 World Series, I recall. I won seven games. Bucky, while we're talking about you, how long have you been pitching now? You started out as an infielder, didn't you?
I've been pitching. 35 was my first year pitching, Mel. I was an infielder for 7 years before that.
Who made you decide to change over to pitching?
Well, I guess it was a thought of going back to minor leagues and Jimmy Wilson being a catcher over there. One of the best in the business. I was mighty glad to start with him. Philadelphia Nationals.
Did Jimmy put the idea in your head, or did you have the idea yourself?
Yes, he was the one that brought the matter up. He thought I could do all right, and I said, well, I'll take a chance on it.
Hey, you've done pretty fair.
He certainly has. All right, let's move along. Who done it? His great hitting in 1928 World Series resulted in the all-time high mark for World Series batting average.
Babe Ruth.
That's right, Mr. Gowdy. He hit .625.
Of course, if you'd asked me who's second in all time, I might answer that.
Who is second?
Happens to be myself.
As a matter of fact, Hank Gowdy led the big leagues with the highest batting mark ever compiled in a World Series until Babe Ruth surpassed it in 1928. Ruth's mark, .625, and Hank Gowdy's mark was .545. Lou Gehrig came along to tie you a little bit later at .545, Mr. Gowdy. And that's Real good company. Hank Gotti, Babe Ruth, and Lou Gehrig. By the way, I did a little research and discovered that you got that average. You got 6 hits and 11 times at bat. You remember what they were?
Yeah.
Not for points, but just for... enlightenment.
He would never forget it.
Jack O'Connor, so you're
3 2 base hits, 1 single, 1 3 base hit, and 1 home run.
That's right.
Oh, I love to talk about that. Let's keep on talking about it.
All right, let's talk about it. That happened in 1914 in that World Series. You were the Boston Braves then?
That's right. Boston National League team.
That's the team that came up from last place after the 4th of July and swept for the pennant. And then what'd you do in the World Series?
Oh, we didn't do bad either. We won 4 straight games. Incidentally, that was the first time that had ever been accomplished in a World Series. Bill was one of the umpires in it.
Yes, sir. I remember him well when he was a scoreboard boy, 12, 14-year-old, and I was a young umpire. I hate to tell you how long ago that was, because it makes Henry an old man.
Which he is.
All right, let's move along. I'd get the last part of this question. Who done it? Another World Series record held by Babe Ruth is that of having hit the most doubles in a 4-game World Series. That record is held by Babe Ruth jointly with a player who first set the record. Who was that?
Wallace? You got me on that one.
I don't know.
I got it.
We'll have to ring the bell on you. Who was it, Mr. Conlon?
Frank Isabel with the White Sox.
No, I'm sorry. You're wrong.
He hit 4 doubles in the World Series in Chicago.
When was that?
Oh, I believe 1906.
Well, I'm talking about in a 4-game World Series.
I'm talking about 4 doubles in 1 game.
Well, the question
was... Question again, please.
One of the World Series records held by Ruth is that of having hit the most doubles in a 4-game series. And that record is held by Babe Ruth jointly with the player who first set the record. Supposedly, Hank Gotti in 1914.
No, that is incorrect. I did not hit 4 doubles.
No, you hit 3 doubles.
3 doubles.
That's right. I say in a 4-game series.
Yeah.
Well, we'll give the team of Gowdy and Walters 3 points. Rather, 6 points out of a potential 8 on that one. By the way, there's the whistle. That's the halfway mark, gentlemen. And now as the second half gets underway, as we look at the scoreboard... The score's a bit misleading at this point because the team of Walters and Gowdy have had one more opportunity to answer a question than has the team of Clem and Conlon, but they'll have a chance to make that up right now. And so at halftime, the score stands 14-7 in favor of the Walters-Gowdy team against Conlon and Clem. But now, gentlemen, and I'm talking about the team of Clem and Conlon, you've got a chance to catch up right here. By the way, before I go any further, Mr. Conlon, I'm going to check after the broadcast on the statements you made. Now, we're not infallible. As you say, who was it made 4 doubles in 1 game on World Series?
Frank Isabel, Chicago White Sox.
I'm going to check on that and...
Against the Cubs.
How long ago was that?
1906.
Well,
who did done it, Mel?
Hank Gowdy, according to our records.
Oh.
In the most doubles in a 4-game series, but I'll check on that. All right, a baseball challenge for Clem and Conlon that should especially excite your memory, Mr. Clem. We say that without prejudice to you, Mr. Conlon, and you're at liberty to answer as well as Mr. Clem. I'll give you the names of managers, big league managers, who opposed each other in past World Series. And from that, you must tell me what teams were playing. This is a 10-point question. Your big chance. You've got a lot of points here now. Number one. Frank Chance versus Huey Jennings. What teams played that World Series?
That was the World Series of 1908.
That's absolutely right. And the...
Incidentally, that's the first World Series that I ever umpired in.
Is that right, Mr. Clem? 1908?
Yes, sir.
What were the teams involved?
Detroit Tigers and the Chicago Cubs.
And the Cubs won that series. Four games to one.
Yes,
they
sir,
met
in the deciding game. The score was one to, or one of the games was the score was one to nothing. And the run that scored was hit out of the ballpark. And we had a ground rule in that game, in that of two bases into the crowd.
The ball was hit into the crowd.
This ball was hit over the fence. And the Detroit club made a long argument about it. So much so that I was forced to draw the line on Huey Jennings.
And when Mr. Klein says he's forced to draw the line, he really means that. He'd draw a line and...
And you're not kidding, either.
They dared step across that line is out of the ball game. Is that right, Mr. Klein? Did he ever draw the line on you, Hank?
Yes, indeed.
What was the object? That if you crossed that line, you were automatically out of the game?
You didn't dare not only cross it, don't step on it either.
All right.
That was just Bill's pet little ways of stopping the discussion about anything.
You just draw the line. When he drew the line, that meant just might as well give up and go back to work.
That's right.
All right. What teams were playing when George Stallings opposed Connie Mack?
Well, that's the big series, 1914.
That's right, 1914. And the teams?
The Braves, the Boston Braves, and the Athletics of Philadelphia.
That's right, as we've already talked about a moment ago, in which the Braves beat the Athletics in four straight games.
Yes.
All right. Ed Barrow versus Fred Mitchell. A lot of people don't recall Ed Barrow as a manager. They always figure him as a general manager and president of the New York Yankees, but a few years back, Ed Barrow opposed Fred Mitchell in the World Series.
It's 1918.
That's right, Mr.
Conlon. World War with Boston, Red Sox.
That's right. Ed Barrow managed the Boston Red Sox against the team managed by Fred Mitchell.
Chicago Cubs.
That's right. Absolutely right. The Red Sox beat the Cubs four games out of six. That's good teamwork.
I umpired in that series for practically nothing because of the war condition.
You mean they didn't pay you for umpiring, Mr. Clinton?
We had a volunteer. We volunteered because of the... something of war, of charity of some kind.
Oh, I see.
I hope that don't happen this year.
You got a chance to be in there this year, Mr. Conlon? You were alternate last year.
I wouldn't say that.
Putting you on the spot. Didn't mean to do that. All right. Let's move along to Park 4. Rogers Hornsby versus Miller Huggins. What World Series was that one?
New York Yankees and the Cardinals.
That's right, 1926.
26.
And the Cardinals won that series 4-3. And the last game went 10 innings when Jess Haynes beat Wade Hoyt 3-2. And they say that's one of the best series of all time, that one.
I recall that. I was behind the plate in the last game. And they sent for Alexander in the bullpen to strike out the famous...
Lazzari.
Tony Lazzari.
Right.
That must have been a thrilling moment in the history of baseball right then and there.
They've wrote many a story about that.
Yes, sir.
I can only interrupt a moment. I'd like to say that if you recall any World Series game that was ever played since the beginning and the raising of the ark on the good world of ours, well, you can remember that Bill Clem was one of the umpires.
You're right about that. He umpired more World Series than any other umpire ever has. I think we ought to give Bill a nice round of applause for that. Bill McKechnie versus Del Baker. That's
1940. Cincinnati Reds, Detroit Tigers. I was in that series.
That's right.
That happens to be the last World Series that I umpired.
That's right, in 1940, the Reds...
They closed the book after that.
The Reds won out...
They closed the book on me, right?
The Reds won out in that series 4-3. And that should be one that you remember quite well, Bucky, and
Yes, Hank? Sir. We was on the winning end, too. I can say, Bill, that was a great job you done as usual.
Thank you.
Well, Bill always has. There'll never be another one like Bill Clem. All right, our time is slipping by, and we move along to the team of Gowdy and Walters. You gentlemen have demonstrated that you're pretty well up on your baseball lore. Now, let's try you out on other sports. As you know, there are certain games that have definite time limits set on them. From that premise, you must tell us to what games the following three time limits apply. First, 40 minutes.
Basketball.
All right. 60 minutes.
Football.
That's right. Or hockey, or hockey, polo, or lacrosse. 90 minutes. 90 minutes. Six-point question. Each part good for 2 points. What sport has a time limit of 90 minutes on it? You kick the thing around a little.
Soccer.
Soccer, that's right. Okay. And 6 full points for Gowdy and Walters. All right, back to the diamond, Messrs. Clem and Conlon. I'm going to... we'll skip that just for a moment. I'm going to go down to this question for you. Our time is running out. I'm going to name several towns and cities famous for certain sports events annually held within its confines during normal times. As I name the town, you name the big sport event held there. Louisville.
Kentucky Derby.
That's right. Indianapolis.
The 50-mile, 500-mile automobile race.
That's absolutely right. And Poughkeepsie.
The rowing event.
That's right, the annual Poughkeepsie Regatta.
Regatta,
and that's
yes.
3 good points for the team of Clem and Conlon. And now, gentlemen, we've got left approximately a moment or so. And in that moment, I'm going to fire away at both teams. Incidentally, our score is all tied up right now at 20
each. Incidentally, we have 2 more points coming.
Why?
You said that was the last question before this was a 10-point question, and we got 8 first.
That's missed... my partner talking.
You missed part of it, didn't
and
you?
And those guys are never wrong,
no.
Mel.
there was a 7 on the board, and he added 10. 17.
Well, I think that's right.
I've been watching that scoreboard, too, John.
I apologize.
That's all right, all right.
We accept your apology.
That's the way to do when you're in the middle of this thing. We've got a few seconds left to go. I'm going to fire away at both teams alternately, at one team at a time here, with nicknames of sports personalities until our time runs out, and we'll have the whistle blown on us. As I give you the nickname, tell me to what sports figure the name belongs. Each one counts 1 point. We'll start with the team of Walters and Gowdy, then back to the team of Clem and Conlon, back and forth till the final whistle blows on us. First, the peerless leader.
Frank Chance,
that's right. The Iron Man.
Joe McGinnity,
there, all right. Or Lou Gehrig. The Greek Adonis. In wrestling, I'll give
Jim
you
Jim Landis.
Jim Landis, that's right. All right, Big Six.
Christy Mathewson.
Right, Mr. Clem. All right, back to the team of Walters and Gowdy. The Flying Dutchman.
Wagner.
Hans Wagner, all right. Over here to Conlon and Clem. Ducky Wucky.
Medwick,
that's right.
That's my partner.
All right, over to the team of Walters and Gowdy, Beans.
Reardon.
Beans Reardon. All
great
right,
umpire,
he's National
too.
League umpire. And Dolly.
Dolly Stark,
another National League umpire who has since retired from the game of umpiring. Goofy.
Gomez,
Maggie. That's right. Dummy.
Dummy Taylor.
Right. Little Napoleon.
McGraw.
John McGraw. And the old arbitrator.
William J. Clem.
That's absolutely right. Thank you very much.
It's an even match.
That's the final whistle, gentlemen. The game's over, so stand by for the final score. The final score is a dead heat. 26-26. Thanks a lot, gentlemen. Really a good game. Much obliged to all of you. You turned in really a swell performance, and we're grateful to each of you. Hank Gowdy, Bucky Walters, Jocko Conlon, and Bill Clem. week, this is Sergeant Mel Allen, wishing you all so long and good luck. This is the Armed Forces Radio Service. Thank you.